Sure. Oh, and I'm going to address one of the questions right now because I know everybody's thinking of it. Yes, you can take your miniature telescope home. but you know, I doubt you'll ever think of a coffee stirrer the same way again, right? Yes.
In here it mentions a documentary film in the beginning, creation according to Genesis. Where is that available?
That is, we got several different things. This one, that's this. Okay. Of course, customs and all that, I did not bring anything, any of my material, okay. But we did bring some order sheets that you can like fill out and order that. That one's a really good one. Again, the Refracted Glory. Oh, I love that one. I did not produce that, but it was just a privilege to be a part of that on the Hummingbirds. Heavens Clear, the Glory of God on astronomy, biblical astronomy. I do some music as well. And then we have a video series called Wonders Without Number, where I've interviewed about the prophetic patterns in the tabernacle, the 6 days of Genesis with Paul Taylor, manuscripts, Who Wrote the Bible with Rusty Mazel, Body Codes, Throne Rooms Walking with Dr. Thurston, and a book that I wrote about 2 years ago called Wonders Without Number. So that's a little summary.
Now I have a question. Relative to the flood, there's all kinds of evidence of fossils that you're finding. In all of Noah, I've never seen any fossils of humans showing up. How come?
Excellent question. Up until that point, there were probably not a lot of humans on the earth. I mean, there were thousands, obviously. But what you have to understand is in the fossil record, it's so incredibly rare to find a fossil because they have to be buried under the most specific of circumstances to survive. For instance, I was telling you about fossilized clams, and we showed a picture of some of those. Many of them were in fragments. Tens of thousands that I was stepping on. But, of course, clams reproduce pretty quickly, very quickly. Mosasaurs are other, you know, marine predators, these massive things. You only find a few of those because, you know, it took a long while to grow that large. And also, there just weren't that many of them. Same holds true for humans. Yeah, it's just very rare to find a bunch of mammals. Yes.
And because humans would also be much more have much better ability to escape the initial catastrophic thing. So they would probably end up floating and decomposing
for a while. That's right. Which is a great point. Some other animals would have done that as well, but yes, a lot of humans would have their survival instinct would have kicked in. They would have tried to maintain on top of the water as long as possible. Things just don't last. I mean, the birds pick things apart quickly, and that's what we find today. When something dies by the side of a riverbed, it's not going to last but a few days before it's gone, and you might have a little bit of skeletal remains, but most of those are going to be scattered. So the very fact that we find thousands of complete fossilized dinosaurs, complete fossilized other creatures, means that they were buried in a catastrophe. So it actually points back, yeah.
Related to that, sorry. I'm going to grab the floor, but evolution say that all the oil came about from the years of accumulation. I don't think that's true. What's your thought on that?
Well, that's a loaded one. And there are actually a couple of different theories on that.
David, what's the question?
Oil over millions and millions of years. How does it form? Is it fossil fuels? Some people nowadays don't think that it's actually fossil fuel. I think it's probably a good chance that it's fossil fuels, but the thing is, you can produce in the lab, we can produce oil-like substances and petroleums very quickly. And if you can imagine the entire face of the earth with all of the vegetation and trees and all that suddenly flattened and compressed under enormous pressure, it just doesn't take that long. It just does not take millions of years.
What was the pressure? The flood?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, when the fountains of the great deep opened up at the time of Noah's flood, there would have been enormous tectonic activity or movement, and tremendous amounts of mud would have been circulated in a rapid amount of time, and as that mud layered out, it may have been miles of what is miles of mud, because that's what you find all over the earth, is several miles of sedimentary layers laid down by water. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the predators that were made it, so the sea predators that would have made it through the flood, they would have eaten a lot of the larger creatures, including a lot of humans, possibly.
There seems to be a lot of evidence for a young Earth.
Yes.
Is there an equal amount of evidence for a young Earth?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people look at the evidence, and we've looked at a lot of evidence tonight. I love looking at the evidence. In the end, of course, it's more about worldview. How are you interpreting the evidence? Because when you think about it, evolutionists and creationists both have the exact same evidence. They're both looking at the same fossilized dinosaur. One of them is saying, well, this dinosaur, we don't see him today, so it must have existed millions of years ago, 65 million years ago. And the creationist looks at it and they say, well, this dinosaur, we don't see him today because many of them were wiped out shortly after the flood. So, again, it's kind of how you look at the evidence. But, yes, there is just as much evidence for a young universe as there is for a young Earth.
Yeah, the reason I'm partly asking that, there seems to be more focus of the evolutionists on things like Star Wars and all these.
Yeah.
And why is this change in strategy that they're trying to focus more on the universe? Because the creationists have done a good job of taking them on an earthy level.
That's exactly right. I think you're right. There are very few people today. I mean, how I got started, how I started my ministry about 6 or 7 years ago, I got a large telescope, and I began using that telescope in my ministry to take astrophotography, photos of space. And let me just show you a picture here. And I realized that very few people were actually focusing on astronomy. Now, you do have a few. And Dr. Danny Faulkner of Answers in Genesis, he's actually used my astrophotography in two of his new books, in the new astronomy book, about 6 of my pictures are in there, and in a creationist high school textbook, another 7 of my photos are in there. So you've got Danny Faulkner, astronomer. You've got Dr. Jason Lau, astrophysicist. But very few are actually focusing on space from a young Earth, young universe perspective. This is one of the pictures from my telescope. That's the Great Orion Nebula. It's spectacular. And you think, well, when you look at Hubble Space Telescope pictures, you think, is that fake? Is that really out there? But no, it's really out there. And the colors represent different types of gases. So you can actually figure out what types of dusts and gases the nebula, which is basically Latin for cloud, a cloud of gas, you can figure out what types of gases the nebula is made out of by what colors they emit. And this is another one that I took with one of my other telescopes. Beautiful, I think. The Rosette Nebula. Mm-hmm. It looks like a rose. It's kind of rare, though, to use astronomy from a young universe perspective in the creationist movement, and I'm trying to fill that gap a little bit with some of my presentations.
Yeah, because what concerns me is that the evolution is more and more going in that direction, arguing for a 50 billion year universe.
Yeah.
If you're saying, well, if the universe is really that old, how can the Earth be only 6,000 years old?
Right.
Right, and I don't know what's fair to counter that argument.
Yeah. And I've done, the main argument is, of course, starlight time. Evolutionists have their own starlight and time problem because the event horizon, basically the horizon problem because of the Big Bang, simply will not accommodate light getting to us in the amount of time needed, even given billions of years. But we've got quite a few solutions for that problem.
Can you elucidate those, a few of those?
Yes, absolutely. This is one of the main telescopes I use. And one of the smaller with a solar filter, and I'm able to get photos of the sun. That's the sun, that's sunspots. That's not a sunspot. That's the planet Venus. That was the transit of Venus back in 2012. It won't happen again in our lifetime. I was actually able to catch a falling star. Turns out those things move pretty fast. Kind of hard to photograph. but anyway, yeah, I can talk about briefly starlight and time. And many of you are probably familiar with this issue. Basically, how if the universe is only 6,000 years old, how can the light from distant stars reach Earth when distant stars are millions of light years away, right?
How could it be in 6,000 years that we can see it?
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
I like Daniel Falcon's answer.
You said that scientists are artificially producing petroleum in the laboratory. What do you use for raw material?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd have to... I'm not sure. That's a good question. I don't know the research. I think there's a scientific paper written on that, but I haven't found it. Yeah. Okay, so you said you like Danny Faulkner's answer.
I do.
I've interviewed Danny Faulkner on the Dasha theory, which is very, very good possibility. Basically, if you look at the words in Genesis used during the creation of the universe, it talks about created and made. So you've got bara, which is basically ex nihilo, created from nothing, and you've got asa, which is fashioned or made from previously existing. And if you look throughout the Genesis account, you'll see rapid formation of many different things, mostly on Earth, right? So it says, and the plants were made, but you can tell that it was fashioned fully into adulthood in only one day. The same with mankind, right? They didn't put Adam and Eve as babies in the garden, right? So why shouldn't the same thing apply on the fourth day of creation when it says that, he created lights in the firmament of the heaven, the sun to rule the day, the moon to rule the night, made the stars also. Why couldn't he have created all of this and quickly fashioned it into maturity exactly like we see? And again, that fits in with some of the other scriptures that talks about the heavens being stretched out. So quickly stretched out into maturity, which would have kept the light here. Another great, I think, very interesting theory is Dr. Jason Lyle's anisotropic light synchrony convention, which basically says we can't measure the speed of light. We can measure the two-way speed of light because, think about it. What you do, you put a mirror on the moon and you shoot a laser from the Earth to the moon, and you record the time the laser leaves the Earth to the time that it bounces off of the moon back to Earth, right? And then you divide that in half, and there's the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second, right? What about the one-way speed of light? It's impossible. So you say, impossible, surely not impossible. What we could do is we could synchronize a clock, two clocks. We could send an astronaut up to the moon, and then we could tell him, we're going to turn on this laser at 12 noon, and you record when the light from the laser reaches the moon. And then we'll come back down and we'll compare clocks. But the very act of moving clocks based on Einstein's theory of relativity, it changes time. So gravity affects time. Almost all of the other physics that we use that could be calculated, sound waves or any of these other things, are all based on the speed of light. In fact, the cesium atoms in the atomic clock are based on the speed of light. So you can't even get two clocks synchronized and move them apart to check it. So what if the speed of light is not constant on the one-way trip? In other words, what if it's different going out than it is going in? Now, of course, that has a lot of implications. It sounds a little out there until you hear the entire theory, and there's papers that I could direct you to on that, which are pretty interesting. But it makes a compelling case that we can't measure the speed of light. A couple more, but that's just a summary.
Would you also conclude it might have something to do with the second law of thermodynamics, since it also has a particle form? And as I understand it, light can be bent by gravity,
Like
magnetism and that sort of thing too.
photons have mass, so light can be affected by gravity. And in fact, gravity affects time. And that's the other main theory out there, is gravitational time dilation. Because the atomic clocks at sea level and on the space shuttle, on the space station, run at slightly different rates. So if you've got a gravitational well near our location, and the further out in the universe you go, the more time would have passed. So perhaps millions of years have passed out there, and it's given relative to our 6,000 years on Earth. So that's another theory, and entropy is something to look into. There have been theories on tired light, photons sort of losing momentum. Light has been sped up and slowed down in the lab through specific prisms. They've changed the speed of light from 186. It's not necessarily a constant. So many different ideas on how you could explain that. But again, evolutionists, atheists have their own problem, the horizon problem, which is completely inherent in the design of the Big Bang. And the only way they can compensate for that is to have an extremely rapid expansion during the first few nanoseconds of the Big Bang.
Inflation
theory, yes. Which is just sort of like putting a Band-Aid over a severed arm, basically. Because they already have so many issues with the Big Bang theory that they can't explain. And so they've got one more issue with starlight and time, so we're going to create this little inflation theory to explain how to compensate for that. It's a major issue for evolutionists. And I would say that we have more science on our side. Based on Einstein's theories of relativity, we have better theories on how to compensate for that. Any other questions? Yes?
David, the atheists seem to be backpedaling, the evolutionists seem to be backpedaling in this arena of design. There are a couple of astrophysicists and these guys that are starting to change their thinking towards the design. They are now coming out and saying, well, there has to be a design. Can you put in any latest developments there?
It's true. It's true. A lot of evolutionary astronomers and astrophysicists look at what's out there and they're saying, there's so much complexity and so much design in the universe that we must admit that it was designed. The thing is, a lot of times, that's leading to the intelligent design movement, which is beneficial in some ways and harmful in some ways. Because, basically, they're saying, well, it looks like design out there, so there must be a designer. But then they leave it to the individual to determine who that designer is. We know who the designer is. In fact, the entire history of the universe is written out for us. But if you don't go ahead and explain who that designer is, then you could easily say, aliens did it. You know? So it does leave a major hole. Some people are backpedaling, as you say, and they say, well, it must be created. But we don't know who created it. We do. We do. And the Bible knows this. Yes?
I have one more question about art. Is creation science in general fully excluding the Dr. Mary Schweitzer discoveries of soft dinosaur tissues, that sort of thing? Because that is such a solid...
That's a great question. Some of them are. Institute for Creation Research is doing a little bit of research on that. I'm trying my best to get the word out there because I've interviewed multiple people on Mary Schweitzer's findings. And in fact, Mark Armitage, I don't know if you're familiar with, he's the one that did a lot of microscope work on the Triceratops horn that was found with soft tissue. He has agreed to be a guest on my program. So, I'm doing what I can. I know several of the people at Institute for Creation Research have mentioned it in their seminars and also on my program. And there are a few at AIG that they're more layman oriented, of course, as they are. So they don't really get into the technical details of it, but they're also talking about it. It's getting out there more. And in fact, I'm working with a paleontologist that may be able to get me to, well, it's possible that I can work in some of the sites where they're finding the Triceratops horns with the soft tissue, and perhaps we could collect additional samples to send to the lab for testing. But for those not familiar, most of you probably are, Mary Schweitzer did some research where in a T-Rex bone, it was T-Rex, right?
Yes.
They found soft tissue when they started analyzing inside the bone. And soft tissue just cannot simply exist or survive for the 65 million years that they claim is needed for evolutionary theory. So the very fact that you're finding soft tissue, pliable material, marrow, and all of that, and other structures in some of the other bones that have been analyzed recently.
Yeah, you're finding intact red blood cells, collagen, and various other things.
Yes.
There is no possibility.
Absolutely.
And of course, it was interesting that a lot of them, the first question we asked was, well, how could these things survive 65 million years? So now they're trying to find some sort of a mechanism to allow them to believe, because their worldview is so firmly entrenched.
I know.
Right?
Well,
and the question they should ask, of course, is the one that we know they should ask.
And that's where the faith comes in. They just have so much faith in their theory because they've been indoctrinated. From an early age, they were taught that they're nothing more, and that's what's being taught today in the school system, is that we're nothing more than the result of an accident. That we're nothing more than animals. Over millions and millions of years, we've slowly gotten smarter, more intelligent, and here we are standing here today. And I'm here to tell you, it's exactly the opposite. Things have gone downhill, and intelligence is, I mean, y'all are a pretty smart crowd. I'm not saying anything about you, but intelligence has gone downhill over the years. Civilizations have been declining. You can look at the way evolution needs to function. If everything must progressively get better and better, more evolved, more complex, and more intelligent for life to exist. And what we're told in the scriptures is that it started out at the pinnacle as perfect, very good, and that because of man's sin, things have been on the decline. And there have been civilizations where there have been peaks of intelligence, many amazing technologies throughout civilizations, the Mayas and the Incas and the Egyptians and the Romans and the Greeks, where they accomplished great things. But at the end, they all succumb to a Romans 120 sort of effect, where they changed the truth of God into a lie, and they served the created more than the Creator Himself. I think we had one back here first, and then.
Is there any short of finding that can stop slow or plug up the interior?
Well, I think that's one thing that we can be better at. And I know because you're here, this means that you are very passionate about the subject. And some of you may be authors yourselves, may have written an article or something about creation science in the Bible. You may be photographers. But that's what the Creation Club's all about. Again, I started that about a year ago for people like you, have a platform to share your information with the world. And a highly searchable Google picks up on this. And of course, it's moderated. Anybody can submit content, but then it's moderated to make sure it's accurate. And then we put it up on the web for anybody to find. So I think that's one thing that we could be better collectively at, is all sort of pooling together. And that's also, again, what I'm trying to do with the Genesis Science Network, is we've been able to put together every major creation science institution in the world to air any of their video content on the network. Well, number one, if you have content, send me an email. If you have, if you've written an article or you're interested in being a weekly, monthly, or once in a while contributor on the Creation Club, send me an email. If you have nature photography or if you want to be added to our photo gallery with some of your photography, send me an email. I have volunteers that work pretty much full time. This is what they volunteer their time to do, is moderate the content that's being submitted from all over the world to the website. Again, this is something the Genesis Science Network and the Creation Club all have monthly costs that I've just been coming out of my ministry funding, but I'm going to need monthly contributors to help support the cause, and prayer, of course. Well, of course. But that's just a few ways that I think that we can be a larger impact and get the information disseminated more quickly.
Any comments on the Higgs
particle? Higgs boson. Yeah, the Higgs boson. Not a lot. It's a pretty complicated theory. And of course, it's not the God particle. It doesn't create matter ex nihilo. It many of you are familiar with what he's talking about. It was all over the news. The God particle. This is what brings matter into existence and tells it how to work. It does dictate functions of matter. It doesn't create anything. So that's about all I, as a non-scientist, as a layman, that's about all I could say. Yes.
Age of the Earth issue is something that I know. Several years ago, I heard Henry Morris give it. 20 reasons why the Earth is not millions of years old.
Yeah.
Have you done any thoughts on evidences for age of the Earth?
I don't have any formal talks put together on that.
Because it seems to be a big issue. Well, I don't care.
Yeah, sure. Well, it is. That's one of the major pillars of evolution. If you don't need millions of years, then you don't need evolution. So evolutionary theory is backed up by millions of years. And if you can destroy the age of the Earth, then you can effectively call the flow of evolutionary theory. Because then nothing makes sense. You can't have things evolve if you don't have millions of years. You can't have the geological formations that we see on the Earth through gradualism unless you have millions of years. It had to have been a catastrophic flood. You can't have, well, again, the list goes on, and I'm sure Dr. Morris covered a lot of that. And I guess you're talking about the senior.
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Morris, the third, did cover some of those, about five of those, on one of my 30-minute episodes of Creation of the 21st Century. And I had the privilege of going out, and he took me out to eat, and him and his wife, and so we talked about some other things, but... Yeah, I've never done any formal talks on the specific reasons.
So let's take one more question and wrap it up. And I think, David, you're going to be around for a bit if people want to talk to you after.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. One more question?
Yes, sir. More of a comment on the Mary Schweitzer question of biological materials. Mary Schweitzer did some research, and she claimed that she found half. She bathed biological materials in red blood cells. And she found that those red blood cells, when they collapse, when they die, they preserve. She did it for 2 years, and she found that it preserved it perfectly. Therefore, she said, it could have preserved it perfectly. Which is a huge stretch. And some people say, oh, she's proved that can happen.
Unreliable
extrapolation. Yes. Yeah, there you go. And it is an extrapolation. It's a major assumption extrapolated out on a small set of data, you know, of 2 years of time of research. The assumptions made to talk about stretches of 65 million is just...
But some people are saying now, oh, she's proved that can happen.
I know.
And so you got to ask them, what is the proof? Mm-hmm. I mean, but all people make
claims without saying the details.
No.
You have to press it on.
Now, I think that's a good way to conclude right there, because that's something we have to be careful with as well. Because there's a lot out there, and some of it is not fully researched yet. Some of these things are new theories. Some are not completely documented. And so before we start sharing proofs for young Earth, young universe, we need to make sure that we've got all of our ducks in the row as well. Because if evolutionists can catch us on just one little thing, they can throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? And we don't want that. Because the evidence is on our side, and we have the instruction book for life that explains the origin of the universe. But we've got to be very careful about the way we present our facts as well. So just as you go out and disseminate the information with others, be very confident that what the Bible says is true, but be very confident that what man says is often fallible, and some of his theories, even well-meaning theories for our young universe, young Earth, can be fallible. So, yeah, that's my advice. Thank you.